Children all around the world, sang the Syrian Munshid Yahya Hawa, play in safety and are pampered. They build castles in sand and paint flowers and mountains. They build hopes for generations. In the morning they carry their books and sing their favorite rhymes. And when nighttime descends, they sleep peacefully in purity. Children all over the world, he said, live in love and pampering, except in my country, Syria, he lamented. Hawa sang about snipers in Syria targeting children deliberately, resulting in their immediate death. Other human rights monitors chronicled the depth of suffering of children in Syria during the war as unprecedented. Children had their lives turned upside down and are scarred for life with horrific consequences on their health, well-being and future. Tens of thousands of children were murdered in Syria since March 2011, including 198 who died due to torture, while 5,229 children were detained or forcibly disappeared. Not only has the regime bombed and arrested men and children, but it also targeted the dearest things to their hearts, namely their children, in order to subjugate and terrorize them and to send a threatening message to the other neighborhoods and areas of the dreadful cost of joining the calls for political change, which explains the regime's repeated bombardment of schools and kindergartens. In truth, it was nothing but the brazen crimes of the regime against children that galvanized the revolution to another level. This uprising was ignited by an act so small, yet so powerful. A few boys in Daraa scrawling graffiti on a school wall, daring to challenge Bashar al-Assad's rule. Among them was 13-year-old Hamza al-Khatib. Their message, "Your turn, doctor," was met with a response so brutal that it sent shockwaves across the nation. The children were arrested, tortured in ways unthinkable, their small bodies bearing the scars of a regime that knew no mercy. When Hamza's lifeless body was returned to his family weeks later, mutilated beyond recognition, Syrians could no longer stay silent. His fate, and that of so many children, struck a raw nerve. Protests swelled into an uprising, and an uprising into a war, as a nation rose against a regime willing to crush even its youngest voices. Syria's children have borne the heaviest burden, enduring unimaginable losses while demonstrating extraordinary resilience. Millions of children were born into the conflict, while others spent their entire childhood and youth knowing nothing but war. They have suffered physical and mental harm, loss, abuse, and the deprivation of their most basic rights, including their fundamental right to freedom and dignity. Many have had to figure things out on their own, often stepping up to care for other family members in their time of need. Many have spent their entire life moving from one camp to another, each time fleeing violence, economic collapse, or natural disasters. Even today, with the war purportedly over, 7.5 million children, which equates to 3 out of every 4 in Syria, rely on humanitarian assistance. At least 2.5 million children are still displaced, half of them in unsafe, overcrowded camps. With the rise of the green, red, and black flags in Syria, and the breeze of freedom being taken in, what bearing has this had on the fortunes of Syrian children? The fact that children in Syria today can hopefully play or go to bed without the fear of barrel bombs or chemical weapons or losing loved ones is a great relief. Still, there is the aftermath of war to deal with, which can be deadly. An estimated 4 children a day are still being killed or injured by leftover explosives in Syria as they return to their homes. Then, there is the question of education At the refugee camp outside Darkush, the camp manager describes the educational opportunities available for children being extremely weak in the camps, especially. In the more urban area of Darkush, we find the educational program more promising. There are broad smiles on the faces of learners as they dart about enthusiastically on the playground of the Birr wal Ihsan school overlooking the Al-Asi River. Children enthusiastically volunteer to recite portions of the Quran for us.
ما أغنى عنه ماله وما كسب سيصلى نارا ذات لهب وامرأته حمالة الحطب في جيدها حبل من مسد.
Also reflecting the confident outlook instilled in them, they recite a rhyme berating the deposed Bashar al-Assad, and another showing how much they cherish their school and teachers.
مدرستي يا بيت الثاني
مدرستي يا بيت الثاني
بفضلك أحقق الأماني
بفضلك أحقق الأماني
مدرستي يا ابتهاجي
مدرستي يا ابتهاجي
ففيك أتعلم الهجاء
ففيك أتعلم الهجاء
معلموها.
We are now at the Birr wal Ihsan school. This school built by Gift of the Givers. School consists of 200 students. Within the war, thousands and thousands of schools are destroyed, and thousands of children out the schools and the students. That is a big problem and big challenges. The last data of UNICEF say that about 40 percent of the Syrian children out of the schools. We need now, after the liberation, we need to care and to build schools and education and the learning.
A short drive away, but in an even more scenic countryside setting, we visit another school, this time too with a solid South African connection. This is Darul Ilm, set up by the South African alima and migrant to Syria, Masiha Saluji, along with the husband and other parents. Buses line the driveway of the institution, and learners line up to return to classes after break. The school is a professionally run institution with a purpose-built premises, deeply rooted in an Islamic ethos, and having separate wings for boys and girls. We are given a meticulous tour of this welcoming institution.
We've got a playground down here for the boys. We've got a playground that side for the girls.
My name is Talha. I'm living in Syria. I'm living in an area called Jamalia. Alhamdulillah, we have a school here that's called Dar al-Ilm, which has around 400 students. It's something that we want to build for the future, for the Ummah. Obviously, with the war going on here since 2011, we've lost at least one generation, and this is something that's important for the people here and also for the Ummah, so that people can help themselves.
In class after class, we find the learning process in full swing. Maulana Bilal pitches in to try his hand at teaching everything from Arabic to mathematics, English and geography. Donors from South Africa have been very instrumental in helping set up this project. The school is still very reliant on outside assistance to cover its running and personnel costs, as many families of learners are unable to do so themselves. What is most noticeable at this school is a spirit of Muslim brotherhood. The school caters for both the children of locals as well as foreigners who settled in Syria, and through its presence, a unique sense of community has been enhanced.
For me, what makes this area special for me personally is the community. Like, we've got brothers where we can go to them. Like right now, my wife isn't here. I'm not worried about it with my kids and food because everybody's helping. So this is just an example that I'm giving you now. So the community, alhamdulillah, we have a good brother-sister community over here. We have, not all the time, but we have Islamic rules going on, people get together. So for me, what makes the area good is having that, because we don't have our families here. We've left our families back in England or in Germany or in South Africa. So these, wallahi, these are my family, you know. So yeah, that's what makes the area special for me. Besides the beauty, it is beautiful, but besides the beauty, that's what makes it special for me, you know.
With the vacuum created by the war, Mualim Asaluji has previously written about the thirst for knowledge she found amongst Syrians. I had people beg me to teach their children, and sometimes I've had to turn people away due to lack of sufficient time, she said. I have had people ask if I cannot stop teaching one of my students who has better knowledge in order to teach them the basic fundamentals. I have had adult women conscientiously repeat the same letter over and over until they eventually manage to sound it out correctly. My heart breaks, she said, every time I send away someone who has come to my door simply to learn. And I think about South Africa and our abundant ulama, how we take for granted what we have. When will we learn to appreciate the gift of education that we are given? And when will we learn to share it with others rather than waste it? These institutions we visit are reflective of the appreciation that exists amongst role players in Syria for education to become well-rooted after the severe derailment it underwent by the war.
It's very good sending food packs and food and all the rest of it. Like, that's very helpful. But it's not a permanent solution. For to teach children to stand on their own two feet and be self-sustainable, we believe that's the solution for the future for Syria and the future for our children, for the Muslim Ummah.
As we reflect on the journey of Syria's children, we note that the scars of war are not just in the ruins of cities, but in the lives of children who are robbed of their innocence, their education, their very sense of security. While the bombs may have quieted, their struggle is far from over. They still face displacement, poverty, and the challenge of rebuilding shattered dreams. The world once failed Syria's children, turning away as they were bombed, tortured and displaced. We should not fail them again. The future of Sham is not only in their hands, but in ours, in the choices we make to support, uplift and stand by them in this moment of great opportunity.